This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to this brand new series of the Sober Rebel podcast. This is the show where I talk to my guests about the benefits they've experienced in sobriety. We talk about how they got sober, but we also focus on why they enjoy staying sober. I have no doubt that you'll find all of my guests as inspiring as I do. But the one thing we all have in common is that we absolutely cherish our sobriety. Today, to kick the series off, I've got a little bit of a different episode. I'm actually talking to husband and wife team, Amy and Mark. Hello and welcome. It is so lovely to have a couple on the show. How are you?
Well, very good, thank you.
Very well indeed. Thank you very much.
It's lovely to be here with you.
Well, let's dive in then. Tell me a little bit about your sobriety collectively, individually. How and why did you go sober? When did you go sober?
So our sober date really is the same, which is the 8th of July, 2022. So just over 2.5 years. My sobriety date is slightly longer than Mark's by default. Just so happened that I hadn't had a drink from the previous week. But the actual day that I'm for sure I decided that that was it for me was on the same day that Mark had had his last drink.
You're always slightly ahead.
I'm always slightly ahead.
A little bit annoying.
Oh, this is going to be a brilliant interview. I can tell it. So what made you sort of say enough was enough with alcohol?
It came from very much from my end. Been drinking since, 18 as we do. But in the sort of last 10 years from my 40s, I suppose it had got more and more regular, but in a sort of more secretive and out of hours sort of way. It was me drinking more and more, but on my own, and trying to, that just increasing to a point where it become out of control. I tried to stop a few times. No one knew, really. Amy didn't know. We both drank together, but to a reasonable level. But beyond that, I was somewhere else doing, something different. No one else knew that. And I tried on my own to stop a number of times, and sort of, Monday came around and it would be, right, let's start with today. And it would just never happen. And so it was really me secretly dealing with this. And it wasn't until we went to the doctors and I had blood tests. I knew what was coming. I knew what those results were going to be because I knew what I'd been doing to myself. I managed to cover it all up very, very well. But the results were obviously what I was expecting, but not what Amy was expecting so much, which was then you need to stop and we'll see what happens. And then 6 weeks later, come back and we'll check the results. 6 weeks later, we went back. The results were still the same. I knew why that was, because I hadn't stopped. And it became just apparent that, now you knew a little bit more about it, that there really was no choice at all. Health-wise, it had become so serious that during that time I should have stopped and didn't. It just got worse and worse. My health had got worse, and my body was physically rejecting the alcohol, as well as food, as well as everything. My liver was just not taking anything at all. So it was incredibly apparent that for the sake of me, my health, my life, my family, everything, that there really was no option but to stop.
Gosh, that must have been so scary.
It was terrifying, but I think the moment that it was no longer just me, because I didn't want to let anyone else know because of the what I felt was shame of that, of not being able to keep control of this addiction that had sort of got a hold of me. And I didn't want anyone else to know. I wanted to be able to control it myself. I wanted to be able to sort it out myself. And it became apparent that that was not going to happen. And the absolute best thing that happened was that somebody else found out. And luckily that somebody was the person that would stand by me and forgive that and understand that, and not only understand that, but actually go along with me and stop themselves. And obviously I'm talking about Amy here. And she, you know, for a number of reasons, but mainly initially in support of me, stopped drinking as well, because she could see the dangers. So yeah, it was very scary, but yeah, have someone else knowing was the most important thing for me to stop it, because I was not going to be able to do it on my own.
Yeah.
So yeah, luckily I had someone with me who didn't, you know, just discard me and not understand. She just stood by me, which is incredible.
Amy's grinning there.
I was like, oh, just get so big headed.
So how did you feel, Amy, with all of that going on? Because that's quite a lot to take in, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. So, and I suppose my take on it is quite different, I suppose, from the other perspective. And I think this is why I really wanted to do this for you, because there are two sides to this journey. And for me, if we go back to us first getting married or us first meeting, both of us drank a lot, you know, so that needs to be that, you know, like we, and don't get me wrong, Louise, if somebody had said to me, do you drink a lot? My answer would have been absolutely not, because we drank at the same level as every other person that we knew. We both came from, especially me, I came from a family that drank a lot. It was our religion, really. It's so important, you know, to us. And it was so normal. So I would never have thought that we did. But on hindsight now, obviously knowing that we did. And of course, that enabled us to carry on doing that together. And then, of course, we grew up a lot more and it became more home drinking and it was also civilized and, you know, all of those things. So when it became apparent to me that there was a problem, and there had been times through our marriage where if anybody was to get drunk, it was me. If anybody was to make a fool of themselves, it was me. And on the rare occasions that happened to Mark, it was quite worrying episodes. And I would then have the conversation that you may have had where I would have said to him, you need to rein this in, you know, we're maybe drinking a bit much, you know. And those conversations would have been had over the years. At no point did I think that Mark was having issues with alcohol until lockdown, when I still had no idea what was going on, but he became unwell. But how I would describe that was, if I spoke to my friends about it, I felt like I was losing him. And I can't really explain how that was, but he was so far from who I knew. And I couldn't see our future. I couldn't see where we would be going forwards, because he was losing him. He was losing himself. He had no interest in anything. And he's not like that at all. He's really creative. That had all gone. He was down. It was really scary. But a little bit of a backstory. My mum, a few years ago, sadly died of cancer. And it was bile duct cancer that led to liver cancer. And the scary thing was, for me, I was seeing so many similarities between Mark and my mum. So in my head, Mark had liver cancer, and this was what we were facing. And of course, I already knew how that was going to work. And I already knew all of the symptoms. You know, I'd Googled this in the small hours over my mum for years. So I'd already taken myself down that path that this is where we were going. And of course, when Mark was told not to drink, I then said, well, we won't drink at home. We absolutely won't drink at home. If I have a drink, I'll just drink if I go out with girls. So that's what we've done. So I'd had probably about 6 or 7 months of not drinking much at all. And I do actually think that these things happen for a reason, because I think at the time I found out that this had become way more of a problem for Mark, I was in a place where I had at least detached my relationship with alcohol a lot. And on the day that I found out that this was a huge deal for Mark, I did not react well. And I did everything that you would expect a wife who'd probably been going through that to do. And I asked Mark to leave, and he had to go off to his mom's, and it was so traumatic and it was so awful. And I look back at that time now and I find that really hard that I dealt with that in such a way that was really uncaring. Quite quickly, we were obviously back in touch because I was really worried about that day. And at that time, I was particularly worried that Mark's mental health was so bad that he quite genuinely wouldn't be able to come back from this. You know, he was in such a bad place. And despite this being a horrific rock bottom, we had a week apart. Mark came home, but by the end of that week, we were back to square one. And then I really realized that this was a much bigger problem. And on the day that we both decided enough was enough, all I can explain it as for me was something took over my body that felt completely unreal, that I said, I am completely done with this. I do not want this in my life. I will not drink again. And it was the hugest feeling. And I can honestly tell you that 48 hours later, I was like, what have I done? I can't do this, you know. But if I ever feel like that, I can go back to that day where I knew with such clarity that I didn't want anything that had taken over my life in such a detrimental way, and was going to kill Mark for absolute sure, and was going to destroy the lives of my family and my children. I knew that enough was enough, and so began my sober journey. And I have to say, I learned very, very quickly that it had to be my own journey, not Mark's. And so although we're very sober together,
yeah,
we have very separate sober journeys. I'm better at it, I'll be honest.
How?
Do you know what is so abundantly clear from looking at you? The love and the humour and connection that you have. Isn't it just sort of unbelievable that alcohol threatens something so clearly, so solid?
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely indescribable how brutal that whole journey was. So brutal. And actually, you know, we've risen from the ashes of that quite gently. Like, there is nothing huge. Yeah. You know, I said to Mark, we're not climbing Machu Picchu. We're not jumping out of aeroplanes. Living life.
Yeah.
Really quietly and enjoying the normality of every day is huge. It's just huge.
I think you bought me a key ring to sum it up, which had got inscribed on it. Living life to the medium since 8th of the 8th 22. And you know, it sounds like it's boring, but it's really far from it. And you know, we've done so much, and they may not be spectacular things, but they're things that I'd lost all interest in doing. I'd lost all interest in doing anything at all other than drinking. And so yeah, you know, the last 2.5 years have been absolutely incredible in a non-spectacular, very steady and wonderful way.
The magic of the mundane, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely is.
And yeah. Mark, you know, no mistake, Mark was dying. You know, he was in a really, really bad way. And we're really lucky that we're here, both of us. And, you know, that we have another day. We're grateful for every day.
The honesty there is just, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. There's so much to sort of touch on, but I'm so sorry about your mum. I'm so sorry that you know, you went through that and that rock bottom. Mark, how did that feel then when you thought, actually, we're going to do this together?
Even from day one itself, it's almost impossible to imagine that you can do it, even despite what's at stake, like say health, family, everything else. And despite the fact that everything is at stake, having that addiction it's still there. Whereas, because you don't believe initially, you don't believe that you're gonna be able to do it. And I think from day one, I was still planning a way to get to the shop. I was still planning a way of getting out and getting to the shop to get hold of something. I didn't think I was going to do it, but it was still there in my head that I was going to do it. So it was really a one day at a time sort of thing. And actually that first weekend, we went to a friend's barbecue, which involved them having alcohol. And we were no strangers to going to places and not having anything, or one of us driving or something. But to be in that situation so immediately after stopping drinking, I remember it being really fine, but I was still suffering from the after effects, which was a lot of shaking. I was not sleeping well. We were in the middle of a heat wave anyway, but I was drenched in sweat for those first 3 nights at least. I was barely sleeping. I was tossing and turning, completely soaking wet, nightmares. Constantly shaking, as all of this, it was, I've described it before as an exorcism, but that's what it felt like, this poison sort of leaching out of me. And when we went to this barbecue, I could barely hold a knife and fork because I was still shaking from withdrawal. But we did that together, and from that point on, it was just really positive. Those first few days were incredibly difficult, but we just shared everything. You know, not drinking, going through a week and a very average week of not drinking, just one day at a time. And then all of these little milestones. It was the first wedding we went to, and the first party, the first you know, Christmas, and the first holiday, all of these little things, which we were together for all of those things. And we just found alternatives, or just, I definitely wouldn't say got through it, because the first party we went to, we were the first ones on the dance floor with absolutely,
I believe that, I really,
yeah,
can.
With absolutely, you know, no. And I think that was more of a surprise to you than me, that you could have a really good time. I don't think I doubted that. I don't think I was using it for that reason. I think I always felt that I was probably better, sharper without it anyway, and still capable of having a good time. So, you know, although we all use it for getting rid of those inhibitions, I still felt like I wasn't ruling out having a good time. I did feel like that was perfectly possible. But I think we shared all of those events together, and we not only got through it, we had a great time. None of those things were a letdown in any way. It was all the things that are meant to be quite difficult without a drink were enjoyable and fun. And that was because we were doing the same thing at the same time.
It's just wonderful that you've got each other. You know, I know that people listening to the podcast will know that Dale and I did it together. But that was driven from my side, I suppose. And that was more about, I had that kind of out of body experience that you talk about, where it's just like, this is enough. I can't do this anymore. And it does feel a bit like that, doesn't it? It's like somebody else has taken over, and you're thinking, hang on a minute, whoa, who's steering here? I'm not sure I want to commit to this. But you know, you have to.
Absolutely. And that absolutely, I have never experienced anything like that before. And it's funny, because immediately I knew that I would need some sort of help. And I immediately went to Al-Anon. And I'm still a member of Al-Anon now. And I find it invaluable. It's incredible to me. And they talk about a power greater than yourself, you know, and they would refer to that as God. And I've always had a bit of an issue with what my God looks like. But on that day, my God, and whatever that was in me. I don't know what that was. You know, I sort of draw from my mom or the strength of something. But the feeling that I had that day was not me. I wasn't in control. And thank God, because invariably when I am in control is when things maybe don't go quite so to plan. But that's been a real strength for me. And I definitely advise anybody that's going through those challenges, Al-Anon is a great place to be, to have those people that help you to work through not the issues really of alcoholism as such, because everybody joins Al-Anon thinking that there's a magic potion that's going to keep your loved one from drinking. And it's not about that at all. But it very, very much helped you to work on yourself. That's been really important, really important for me.
So just to clarify, Al-Anon, that is AA, yeah?
So it's the, I suppose, if you like, a splinter group for the relatives of alcoholics.
The families are.
And they have Al-Teen. So if you had children or teenagers struggling with parents drinking back in the early days, immediately it was definitely me that dug into podcasts. And I was not listening to those for me. I was listening to them, absolutely going through them. And actually, it became a bit much, didn't it? I was listening to them so often to find a way to keep Mark where he needed to be. I was, again, looking for this magic wand to make this all go away and be okay. And I started to realize quite quickly that the journey did very much had to be mine. And the biggest thing that Al-Anon gave to me, I think, even on the first session that I went to, were the three C's. Which you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. And when somebody said that to me for the first time, it felt like the hugest weight had been taken off my shoulders. Mark is his own responsibility. It's too huge for me to be responsible for Mark's journey. And the only person I could be responsible for was myself. And that was like a lifeline then. So, and that's basically how it's gone along since. And I've very much focused on this as being like my experience with not drinking, which has been huge because I was a big drinker. I didn't feel like I was, but I absolutely was, you know, and I had to take that away from myself and experiencing what that is like. I know that everybody does this differently, but when somebody is in addiction and you do this yourself, you have at least an inkling of what it's like to be on that journey, you know, because that you cannot do that with a drink in your hand. You know, you absolutely can't, because even as a moderate drinker, I could not believe the insight I got when I wasn't drinking. And I dug in massively to the science, the benefits, and I became so angry with alcohol for so long, you know, that fueled me further. That just kept propelling me further. But you never had that, did you? You were never angry with it at all.
No, not at all. I felt like it was I felt like it was me with a drink that was the issue. I felt like I know I was never angry with it. I'm still around it now. I was still going to boys' night. I was still, and they find that incredible. And they actually, even after 2.5 years, they will come out with their tray of shots while I'm out with them and say, oh, is this really insensitive? I feel really bad about doing this. And I'm going, if I didn't feel comfortable in this situation, I would not put myself in. So I still want to go out and have an ordinary night and speak to my mates. The only time we're going to get a bit of a catch up, and while they're drinking and I'm watching them gradually get more slurry and repeating themselves, I'm sort of having fun and having a conversation, and then I'm able to drive myself home and anyone else who wants to come with me at the same time. If I was angry with it, I couldn't put myself in that position where I would be sat in a pub with lots of other people drinking and sort of be the only one who isn't. If I was angry with alcohol, then I just couldn't do it. At the very beginning, after the third day, I went to AA, and I had 6 weeks there, and I'm really grateful for it, particularly at the beginning, because it sort of reinforced not being alone. It's like I'd heard a few stories on the podcast that Amy was listening to, but in my real life, I've never heard a person describe what I was doing with drinking in that secret, quiet way of going to a supermarket and then going to a different supermarket the night after because you didn't want to be recognized in the first one, and actually going to AA and hearing those stories that actually were you and mirrored exactly what you were doing, and actually thinking, this is not just me. This is not just me. I thought this was such an alien thing to be doing. And it's unusual, but when you hear other people saying, yeah, I've done exactly the same thing, AA was useful for that. But after about 6 weeks, I think it's hugely, massively, undeniably useful for so many people. But I felt like it wasn't for me, and it wasn't something that I needed to keep me sober. Yeah, I was really grateful for what it had given me, especially at the start. But I felt like it wasn't benefiting me personally. I didn't actually need it, but I know it's always there if I do. But you're still on Al-Anon, and the kids even will go, "Oh, is mom watching this with us tonight?" No, she's on Al-Anon tonight. You know, it's mom's Al-Anon night, so even the kids are aware of that. But it's been hugely beneficial to you.
Doesn't that just demonstrate, though, how different people? I mean, you're a married couple and you've both approached it differently. You're a married couple that both drank socially, admittedly quite heavily at times, a bit like Dale and I. And one of you developed an issue and the other one was being reflective in it before that happened. And so it's so different for everybody. It's not a case of one size fits all when it comes to the solution or how you want to go sober, because that's the only thing I do tend to notice. There seems to be this right way and wrong way to do things. There isn't with anything in life. We're all so different.
Yeah, and I think especially for me with Al-Anon, when Mark initially sort of said, AA's not for me, thank goodness I'd been to Al-Anon, which had already taught me that I had no control over what Mark did, you know, and that was so important that he had to have his own journey and I had to let him deal with that. And, you know, I am a huge control freak. So, you know, like for me to try and step back and allow him to do this himself was huge, and it is still huge, and I still have a tendency to go, but you know, but and I have to stop myself from doing that, and I don't always get it right, but I give it my best shot most of the time. I think it was a huge part of helping me to help Mark in the right way, which was to let him have his own journey and his own way, and help me to dig into mine. And that's something that I'm still working on for me a lot.
And it's scary, isn't it? To part of the reason we want to control, we want to, you know, because I could probably hold my hand up there and go, I'm a little bit of a control freak myself, but we can't control things. And actually, that's what tends to then cause anxiety.
I do think a huge thing for me was that for 20 years, I absolutely thought I'd been in control, and I had absolutely no control. I had no idea what was going on. But for 20 years, I thought, I've got all this sewn up. This is, you know, we've got this lovely life. And obviously, when I found these things out with Mark, it made everything feel like had it all been a lie, you know, is all of that life that's gone before, was all of this not really what I thought it was? And that the actual truth of that is, for all of those years, Mark had been an incredible dad and a wonderful husband. We had a conversation recently because I always say that Mark is my goose and I'm Maverick. And the biggest thing for me during lockdown was I have a tendency to take on so much stuff, but I need a great co-pilot in that, because actually I'm completely incapable of doing the amount of stuff I've said I'll take on. And Mark was always in the background carrying everything for me while I was on the one looking like I was nailing life. Mark was picking up an awful lot of the slack and he couldn't. And all of a sudden I was drowning because I couldn't do all of these things because I didn't have my co-pilot. I'd ejected and I didn't know. And you know, that was huge. And I think that was when things really started to become apparent that it wasn't the same, and that it would all started to go. And I absolutely could not see what that was. And through that time, there were really scary health th things that happened. Like one day, one of the things that really stands out is Mark had helped a friend of mine move some wood. Because Mark was on furlough and then he was made redundant. All of these ha things happened, which all compounded what was happening during lockdown. And I'd sent him off and said, go and help this friend. And when he came back, his arms were black in bruises, absolutely black, like horrific. And he'd said to me, they were really heavy. I said, Mark, this isn't normal. Now, this was probably 6 months before, and that's how Mark's blood wasn't clotting, you know. And those little things were happening. So, of course, I'm thinking, he's really sick, something is really wrong. So I lived probably for the best part of a year being terrified that Mark was really sick and that nobody was listening. And, you know, it wasn't until we went to the doctors, and we went because Mark's eyes were bright yellow, that I said to the doctor, he is going to die and this is going to be on you, that we got anywhere. How, unbeknown to me, the doctor knew that things were more of an issue. I didn't know that, obviously, but it at least got us into the right path. And as things all unfolded, it was...
That just exploded at that point. It was... I felt like I was having some form of procedure every few days. It just happened, right? You're going to be at hospital on Sunday morning, and you're going to have a camera stuck down your throat into your stomach, and then we're going to have this, and you're going to have, and all of these medical procedures to check everything. It was really frightening.
Really scary moment was, we had, Mark had had some blood tests. We'd been in A&E one day, and Mark had some blood tests, and we'd gone off to bed that night. And in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, there was an ambulance outside our house and a doctor to say, we need to see Mark because his gamma GT levels, which I knew nothing about until that moment, were so high he should have died. So they said, you know, this was in the middle of the night. You know, it was really scary.
Should have caused massive confusion.
And it was. So Mark had this I can remember it, but yeah. Basically it was like he had dementia. So it was a really, really scary time. And what I can tell you is that within days of no alcohol, Mark was 90% better. And he'd lost so much weight. And it, when you look at somebody disappearing, just completely disappearing, to then within a couple of weeks having them back, there is no greater picture of why you should not do this.
I can believe all of that, obviously, but it's it is unbelievable. Obviously scary for both of you. But Mark, if I can ask, because health anxiety around drinking was something that was always bubbling away in the back of my mind, and I was bruising really easily. I woke up one day and I had a sort of a big bruise on the back of my calf, and my friend noticed it and she said, oh my goodness me, as we were walking into school, have you hit yourself? No. I always had this like dull ache around my kidney area. And so actually, as somebody who was drinking like a bottle of wine most nights, I was terrified to go to the doctor. How did you feel at that point?
So when your friend asked you, did you know what the bruise was from? Did you just not?
I kind of guessed. In fact, I Googled liver and bruising, and I realised that obviously then your blood isn't clotting. And yeah, it was the only time that happened, although I would say I bruised very easily. And then when we moved in here a few months ago, I hit my leg really badly on a concrete slab. I mean, they heard it. That's how bad I hit it. Yeah. And there was no bruise.
I could not
believe it. And so it just does show how the body heals. I mean, I don't know where I was on that scale. I've just had all my bloods done and they've checked my liver and everything with the health scare I had. And they've come back saying, oh, your function on your kidneys and liver is excellent. So it's like, what was going on? I was too terrified to actually go and have any tests, if I'm honest. But how did that feel then when I'm going to have tests? Did you feel like you were sort of almost, it just happened?
It just all of these things happened. But I can go back to when Amy talks about her mom being ill and the reason for it. I remember Amy talking about each symptom of the liver beginning to fail. And that staying with me. And I started having the symptoms, one of the ones being ones you're talking about, which is the pain in your back, which is pain in your lower back and your, you know, I'd started getting little tingles around my liver area. It's okay. I can see that's
Yeah.
and I started getting little tingles. And I was sort of thinking, what, and occasionally it would be like a little kind of gentle prodding, poking pain, and I remember thinking this is just not normal. And I started looking into it because of Amy's mom. I started looking into the symptoms, and initially there's this list of I don't know 8 to 10 symptoms or something. And I remember looking through and going, I don't have enough of them. I might have one or two of those. So I'm all right. It became, and one of them leading right up to the bruising, the yellowing, the bruising. The bruising was ridiculous. I stand by the fact that that wood was incredibly heavy. But it should not have done that. And I showed people that and they were just shocked. And it was my entire arm was just black, both. And I never bruised easily. I never it was it, so it was something that was different. But
Something new.
gradually, one by one, those symptoms I was able to tick off. And when it got to that point where it was like undeniably, this is what I knew what happened. But it was yeah, we need to do all of these tests. And that was terrifying. I felt like I was just constantly being sat in a waiting room or having something done or about to be done. And then after that, all of that stopped. They did everything that they needed to do. And really, the simple answer was, I was on the border of cirrhosis, right on the edge of it. And to the point they said, we will call it this. You have got this. Because obviously irreversible. And everyone would always, throughout your journey, it's always, oh yeah, don't worry about your liver because it just regenerates and it will heal itself. And da, 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 da. Until you get to a point where you are permanently scarred and it won't heal itself. And if you continue to drink, the scarring will get worse. There's no going back. There's no healing. There's no getting better. All you can do is attempt to maintain where it is. So stopping drinking was the thing to do to kind of maintain it. It was never going to be fully healthy again because it was permanently scarred. And it was yet another reason to go, I can't do this. If I do any more, the scarring is going to get worse and I will die. And there's no question about it. So the health thing gradually just got worse and worse until I stopped.
And we've sort of drifted, haven't we, into one of your sober benefits? Because I asked people on here to talk about their sober benefits, and health, you mentioned before we started recording, was a massive one for you. I mean, I can see why. What about you, Amy? Did you notice as kind of the, I think you were drinking more like I was, but as women, as you know, we can't process things. Did you notice anything?
In myself, hugely, but I also I also have to say that back in my early 20s, my liver was investigated anyway, and they'd sort of put it down to a non-alcoholic fatty liver. And basically, it was more or less like non-alcoholic fatty liver, go away and don't worry about it too much, which I genuinely did for the next 25 years. So, of course, that was huge. I hadn't had a normal liver result my entire adult life until now. I was diagnosed not long ago with type 2 diabetes, which I was able to reverse within a few months. And that would have been huge because obviously drinking would have been adding to that as well. I always had this mysterious, I think I might have even mentioned this to you in a comment, but I, because I know you were talking about your skin, but I always had this horrific pain in my stomach, which would I would put down to too many carbs, I would put down to all sorts of different things, MSG and all of those things. Never did I put it down to alcohol, but I can honestly say in the times that we've not drank, I can probably count, well, I can probably say maybe three times I've had that, and it would have been a regular, really regular thing. I absolutely think that was down to alcohol, and it would have been the last thing I would have looked at. Well, I didn't look at it.
My IBS progressively got worse over the last few years of drinking. What a state to actually be in, and still not say, hang on a minute, do you think maybe it might have been the fact you downed a bottle of wine
Absolutely.
last night? I say downed, I didn't quite drink like that, but you had a bottle of wine last night, and coincidentally this morning, why don't you have a week off it? See if symptoms calm down a
Oh,
bit.
I mean, my mindset back then would have, if somebody had said to me, why don't you try Dry January? why would I want to give up alcohol on the worst month of the year? Like, it would have blown my mind that anybody even has a go at this. You know, to be where we are now, looking back to who I was as a drinker, I'm not anywhere near the same person. You know, I am obviously, but I'm not completely. And the health benefits for me have been huge, because it's not only do I feel better, but for the most part, and I don't mean all the time, but for the most part, I just make better choices for myself, generally. And it's still a daily practice, but I'm making much better choices for myself, and alcohol took that away from me. And when I look at my relationship with alcohol now, I suppose when I say I'm angry with it, is that it was so important in our lives that it did come right up there before. Like, as an example, I would say for the girls, I would never have allowed the girls to have a club or an activity on a Sunday afternoon, because that would have been our time to have had dinner and a drink. They would never have come before that, you know, and that horrifies me now to look back and think that. But for me, that was quite normal. That's Sunday afternoon. This is a nice family afternoon. I don't want you to do that because I don't want to get in the car.
Yeah. No, I'll hold my hands up there as well. Izzy is now doing a drama club on a Sunday morning. It's where she is now. And she loves it. And she's asked before. And we did do it when we were drinking. But as soon as she didn't show as much interest, we cancelled it. You know, it was like, oh, okay, no, that's fine. Because we can have a lie-in and then we don't worry about getting up the next day. Yeah. But when she said last year, I think I'd like to go back to it, I was all for it.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I have no problem with getting up like I did this morning, 6 a.m. this morning, getting on with things. Every day is the same, isn't it? You're not writing days off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been huge for us, hasn't it?
It's, yeah, absolutely.
It's one of the things that we were talking about the other day, was I said, finding things funny, I love, is the genuine connection to humour. And laughing your head off and thinking that alcohol made things fun. And it absolutely doesn't. You know, things that are funny are just funny. And I love that. I love the humour that's come with that. And that just gets stronger and stronger. It's brought so much more clarity into authentically living. It's a wonderful thing. And I feel sorry for the people that don't get to experience that, you know, sort of give all of that credit to alcohol as we would have done. And actually, it didn't deserve any of it, you know.
And alcohol doesn't deserve it, no.
No, you just cannot understand that as a drinker. You just can't. You know, I wouldn't have done at all.
No.
I really would have thought people were trying to hoodwink me into not drinking.
Yeah. You know? There are no benefits.
This is a lie. And it's just enormous. I would say one of the things that I still find quite difficult is I didn't ever realise that I didn't need alcohol to be as a connection or celebration at all. I can perfectly do that on my own. I do still find it quite tricky if times are difficult in any way. I do still find I absolutely used alcohol to calm down and to bring myself down. And that is still something that I'm trying to find the best solution to, the whole meditation thing. And I find it so difficult. My head is permanently on the go. So that I'm still looking for the greatest answer to that. I would say that's the only area for me that's been more of a challenge, has been calming yourself down. And I suppose even including that has been a bonus, because I've had to work through those things. I've had to look at why I feel like I do. But it's on those occasions where you just don't want to look at how you feel like you do. You just don't want to think it. And that I did never realise that I was using alcohol in that way. I didn't even know that. I remember back in the early days saying to Mark, I don't really like flying. And every time I'm on an aeroplane, I feel like I'm mentally keeping the aeroplane in the sky. And if I stop thinking for 1 second, all these people are going to die. And I said, I felt like that constantly. And it wasn't until I realised that was because I'd stopped drinking. That I was constantly in that feeling of keeping everything up. And that was so exhausting. You know, that state of feeling a bit afraid of what might happen if I just took my eye off the ball for a second. I wasn't keeping anything going. I was barely keeping myself going. But it was that feeling. Thing, you know, that was open a bottle of wine at night. You could let that aeroplane plummet and not worry. And it was a big realization that, hold on, that's why I feel like this constantly, because that's what I was using that for.
And alcohol fuels that kind of overthinking anxiety as well. So although we have this illusion that it's calming it down.
Yeah.
I mean, what have you noticed, Mark? Because you're obviously the other side of that. Have you noticed that Amy feels calmer?
I think the thing I've noticed most of all that is that for the most part, she will take a step back before reacting to something. She's taken a look at herself and constantly trying to change and improve the way she thinks about things. For that to come from such a bad place initially, such a bad situation, to have all these glorious things come from such a horrendous situation is just great. It's really difficult to think of anything negative that's come out of this.
So as an Al-Anon would say, another effing growth opportunity, which seems to come every day. Like, it's another growth opportunity. That's all it is, another growth opportunity. I should be ginormous now.
Now, I don't normally do this, but I'm just interrupting the episode for a few moments to tell you about Substack, which is a writer's platform that I've now joined so that I can share even more content with you. You'll be able to find all the podcast episodes on there, but I'm also going to share lots of long-form written articles, not just about going sober, but about enjoying sobriety and what comes next. The publication I've just launched is called Beyond Sobriety. And if you're new to Substack, not everybody knows it, it's really simple to pop on there, pop your email address in. It's not a social media platform in a traditional sense. What will then happen is anything that I write or produce will be sent directly to your email inbox. You can download the app and read content in the app as well. But all of the content will be focused on what comes after stopping drinking. It's about transformation, mindset shifts, and opening up to new ways of living. In order to join Substack, you can subscribe for free, or you can get a paid subscription. And I will be sharing a lot of content on the free platform. If you want to go deeper, you can always join me as a paid member for £8 a month. I've got so many things planned, conversations that matter, what no one tells you about certain subjects, the quiet wins of sobriety, and some stories from the community the moment it clicked for them. If you'd like to head to my website, you can find a link on the bottom of the page, or go directly to Substack if you're already on there and look for me, Louisa Evans, and Beyond Sobriety. Now back to the episode. So how is the health now? Let's just sort of recap on that. So how is your liver and everything now, Mark?
You're going to speak for me. Amy's going to speak for me, I believe.
Yeah, I'll speak for Mark. So Mark had lots of tests, and they based that his bloods were enough to put him in a really high risk area without them doing anything. And they said what they would like for Mark would be to avoid alcohol for 2 years, and then they would do a fibro scan, and the fibro scan would be more detailed in how stiff the liver had become. So we waited, and in July you had your fibro scan. Yeah. And it was so much better than we could have hoped for. So Mark will always be under the monitor, which is great.
Which is good, yeah.
More risk that, you know, that something could occur. But providing that you have a healthier lifestyle, and that's something that we're still working on, because obviously that includes all food as well.
Yeah.
So because of that, he will always be monitored. But it was looking really, really good. But we have, you actually went for your scan.
Yeah, I have an ultrasound every 6 months. That's going to continue. And then a consultation about the results of that afterwards. So that's
where we get to go in. We go in together, which is terrible. So Mark should really be going on his own. Because yeah, of course, I shouldn't be trying to control the situation. So yeah, we do that after 6 months. I
mean,
love it.
There was one instance where, I mean, this one, she insists on going with me. And we couldn't find a parking space. So obviously I got out and went to my appointment. And she insisted on, whilst driving around the hospital grounds, trying to find a parking space, she was involved in the conversation.
I dialed in.
So I'm trying to speak to the nurse, and all we're hearing is, I thought there was a space there. And she, you know, she's, yeah, so wants to be involved every step of the way. But I think more importantly, she wants to, because I'll get weighed before every consultation, and that's the bit she enjoys the most. She enjoys me being weighed so she can tell them how bad I've been. And
yeah, because, you know, old habits die hard. And I do believe that he is still a little secret fridge picker.
I'm just grateful to be able to eat once again, to be perfectly honest. I need to make a few changes, and that's the intention.
One thing at a time, though.
We're just after Christmas. It's difficult, isn't it? But
there's still the cheese and the chocolate to finish
there's
up.
There's still the cheese. There's so many leftover chocolates to get through before that can happen. But I think, you know, when we started our own Instagram page, it was Amy and Mark Get Harm, which didn't mean what it meant, you know, particularly climbing high up and getting our hearts going and looking at the beautiful views and breathing in the fresh air. And last year, I suppose, despite the many, many things we did do, that sort of, we didn't do as much as that of that. And I think we would like to get a bit more walking together and high up and long walks and, you know, a little bit more of that, which will help with losing a bit of weight and keeping my liver very healthy, which is what I need to do. That's kind of the goal for this year, really, just to get a little bit healthier, really.
And we had a spectacular year last year because we both turned 50 last year.
Yeah.
And we did so many lovely things. And one of the things that we did was we went on our own without the girls to Norway and did the fjords. So we got really high and it was amazing.
Incredible.
And, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do any of these things. You know, I would have been turning 50 on my own, you know. So it was huge, wasn't it?
The truth of what you just said there, that you'd have been celebrating your 50th on your own. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I was not going to make it. I wasn't.
We've often sort of had that conversation that it's as awful, you know, hopefully we have many years to go and hopefully we're both well and life stays really good. But even if it didn't, we've had 2.5 remarkable years that we wouldn't have had, you know. And, you know, had that happened at the time, if I'd have lost Mark at the time, I'd have lost Mark with so many unanswered questions about his health, what was going on for him. You know, it would have been horrific to have not known that Mark had been going through all of that by himself for years. And I didn't know. You know, so the truth of these things needs to be able to come out. People need to be able to live their lives without shame, you know, and judgment, huge judgment on people. And, you know, I'm sure that I have been one of those people, and it really makes you, you know, live in a greenhouse and see what that looks like. You know, it's huge. You know, that's been a big lesson to us, another growth opportunity.
Yeah. The single most crucial thing was someone else knowing, was me almost being forced to, but just telling somebody else. You just can't do it on your own. And despite my best intentions at certain points where I was just going, do you need to make a change? I just can't do it because there's the only other pressure is coming from yourself. It's sort of, oh, we'll give in this week. No, we'll do, we'll try again this week. And, you know, it was just someone else. And if there's anyone out there who is struggling on their own, just talk to somebody, and because the sense of relief when someone else knew was just incredible. That would be my moment. It's like when I've actually told someone the extent of what was happening to me and what I was doing to myself. Just the relief. I thought it was going to be terrifying, but it wasn't. It was such a positive thing.
And although we have, you know, most of our friends are all still drinkers and drink as they do, we have incredible friends. We are so lucky to be surrounded by people that love us, that we can absolutely talk to. That's been incredible, hasn't it? They're amazing. You know, they've been a huge part of our journey.
You think you're going to be judged and you get nothing but love and support.
Yeah, and also, I have to say as well, we're digging into the sober community. And within a few weeks, I joined the Midland Sober Society, which is a Facebook group. And they have all been incredible as well. We've gone out on lots of sober events and enjoyed meeting up with our sober crew, which has been incredible as well. That's been lovely. So they've been amazing guys.
Yeah, it's so important to that sense of belonging as well, because although you're not removing yourself from your existing social circle, you are changing a dynamic. Yeah. And you can sometimes, when you're early in sobriety, really feel like, oh, okay, do I belong here? Well, you do belong. You've just got to get used to it. However, creating and making new sober friends really does help, because then you've got that immediate glue of sobriety whilst you just find your feet socializing with your everyday friends sober.
Yeah,
and I definitely felt for a long time. So when we started our Instagram, it's really an Instagram account for us to look back at what we've done over that time. It wasn't really for anything else. And I did feel like I didn't really know where I belonged in that, because I was the wife of, and also giving up as well. So I always felt like I didn't quite fit into either lane very well. You know, it was
it's quite an interesting situation, us two, because we don't really know anyone else in this position. And like most accounts that you see are usually one person dealing with it themselves, but this is two of us going through it.
I know that me not drinking isn't keeping Mark from not drinking, but it certainly helps to have that commitment together.
Yeah, it does. It really does. So this show has taken a slightly different format, which I thought it might do. because we've done your one benefit of sobriety. We've got two more sort of areas. And I'm sure what you'll say is, well, I've sort of covered all of this, but I know one of the things you wanted to talk about was freedom.
Huge freedom. One of the biggest things for me is the ability to drive wherever I want to go. I would have absolutely been the last person offering to drive. I would have not gone somewhere of any distance if it meant a really expensive cab, or it limited so much, especially around the girls, you know, knowing that if I absolutely needed to, no matter what time, our daughter is coming up to 19. We've actually been on the phone to her this morning because she's got a horrific hangover.
She's got a hangover.
but knowing that if she needed us, you know, New Year's Eve, I was able to go and get her at 1:45 in the morning. Yeah. You know, the freedom that it's given us, that we can go anywhere, do anything at any time of the day, is marvellous. Absolutely marvellous.
A lot of people think that drinking is freedom, but it's the exact opposite, I think. I started a new job probably 3 months into sobriety. And it's a job that I could not have done if I was still drinking. The amount of focus that's required, and you know, I would not have been capable of doing it. So it is opened up. It's the amount of things that have been gained from not drinking is incredible compared to what you actually lose. So yeah, the same as Amy, really. Just being able to do anything you like, anytime you like, not being restricted by. We're going here and we're drinking, so then we need just the horribleness of being in the middle of town on a Friday night or whatever it is, and knowing you've got to wait in the rain for a bus or get a taxi, Uber, and just, you know, I will have a good night out and then go, I'm going home now, and I'm home, done. But freedom in just so many ways.
It's so liberating.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, you had that great moment, didn't you, with Lily? Started university. We took to Leeds. Mark was able to carry everything from the car. He trudged back and forwards, back and forwards, back and forwards. He was absolutely soaked through to the skin. And when we were in the car on the way home, he said, I was able to do that for my daughter. You know, and that was that. It's massive. You know, he could not have done that. I, you know, I could do that. I could do that for her. I could send her to university. I could help her and be exactly what she needed. And that's, you know, we can be exactly what our kids need.
That's freedom. So what is your third thing?
For me personally, on a creativity level, and that's been a big part of my life since I was very small, and it went from drawing comics to writing songs to writing children's stories. There has been a creative element in my life that I've sort of tried to pursue in a, you know, to get some form of success from, but actually really I'm doing it for me because I enjoy it, and I've ultimately come to, through a huge amount of failure and in that sense, realized that I actually do this because I enjoy doing it. And I'd lost that. That was huge, because that was everything. I constantly, since a very early age, there has been something, and I've never stopped. And the only time that's ever stopped, even through having young children, and there was always something creative going on in my life that was really important to me, that I would throw everything at and really get stuck into. And it had gone purely because my only focus was on alcohol, and that it just disappeared. And that was one of the big sort of clues for Amy, was that had sort of disappeared, that I didn't have the motivation or inspiration to create anything. And that came back immediately after stopping drinking. It reappeared, and it was just obviously one of those things that would be a distraction from thinking about drinking, but it wasn't just that. It just, this natural sort of hunger to do that again came back. No matter how ridiculous and silly whatever I was creating was, it was still something I sort of cared about and wanted to do and made me happy. And that's been huge to get that back. So I'm writing songs and stories and making silly videos and you know, doing birthday parody songs for people, and you know, just crazy, crazy stuff that I always enjoyed doing that had just been wiped out completely.
And Amy is beaming next to you. How's that feel to hear that?
Yeah, it's so lovely. It's so lovely. It's really, it was the biggest telltale sign for me that things weren't right. And it's amazing to see all of those things come back. It's really, for me, it's a huge gauge on Mark and his health and his mental well-being. It's right up there, you know, to a point in the right direction that everything's going well for Mark. So that's really lovely. I think definitely for me, it would just be like a personal growth in just looking at myself. I think it's been finding out a little bit more about who I am and working on my relationships. And I think I definitely have pushed myself to do more things, and I've had a lot more consistency with that because I've not had alcohol in my life. So that's been a really big thing, and that's a, you know, a daily thing, and that's that I quite enjoy getting out, going to the gym, listening to you. So often, Louisa, you're on my treadmill with me, so I binge listen to all of my podcasts. They've
honestly
all been so huge.
Trying to have a conversation with Amy, she's just got a big headphones on, and you're talking away to her, and she's just somewhere
not
else.
Not in the room.
Usually, listening to you.
You were talking to the guy recently, weren't we? You were in work. Mark works from home a few days a week, and I was decorating the kitchen, and was listening to the guy who was living in the lockup for a while on your podcast. And you were listening to it, weren't you?
I was
the
working
other
away in a different room, but
and he kept coming in, you know, like it was.
So, I mean, there's been such a variety of guests, hasn't there, on the podcast?
So like, interesting. Yes.
Just shows there's commonality and, but differences.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have so many sort of sober accounts that I have to say, especially women for me. But I've so many sober accounts that I just love to see pop up in my newsfeed, you know, and they're all the ones that you might expect. But they've been incredible for me to listen to and follow. I've loved.
Yeah, it's a different sort of sense of belonging, isn't it? When you kind of go, oh, there's this little world of sober people. You know, because some people might stumble across this podcast through the podcast platform and not realise what we're talking about. So if you head over to Instagram and type in hashtag sober, I'll put my details at the end of the show as well, and Amy and Mark's details at the end of the show in the show notes. But yeah, have a little explore, because there's so many people out there, so many different walks of life, so many different ways of doing it, that it's really inspiring.
You just have to find the way that works for you.
You do. You do. And you clearly have, you two, and you're enjoying it and you've got those benefits. And to hear, I am so sorry how bad it got, you know, none of us know. I think there is a saying, isn't there, that it's a slippery slope and we don't know how far down that slope we are or how far we could get. You know, there, it's alcohol is addictive.
Scarily as well, I would say, to go down that slope with the person that you love, and the person that you love cannot see how bad that is for you. It's so well hidden. And you're doing such a great job of completely masking that until you can't.
Yeah.
And then for most people, when they can't, it is too late. So we're really, you know, we see that so often, and we know that how lucky we've been to be in this position. And, you know, going through the one day at a time and this too shall pass is huge. And it's keeping those things, because it is very, very, very real. It could happen to anyone.
It really can. I have so enjoyed, I could talk to you for hours.
Oh,
so enjoyed chatting to you too. Just seeing that, just seeing the love and connection and the support is just beautiful.
Oh, it's been lovely talking to you, Louisa. It's lovely to meet you.
Oh,
of course, I feel like I meet you all the time. So I'm always listening to you.
Always.
I am the third wheel in your marriage. Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message. And you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time.